98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Bigley Blast.
Sorry about that. Sports owners come in three flavors, the good, the bad, and the ugly. A bad owner can ruin a great sports town. The best owners are just like offensive linemen, rarely noticed and rarely mentioned. A bad owner can stigmatize a city. Bill Bidwill once turned Arizona into an NFL punchline, while Robert Sarver is currently turning it into an NBA landfill. A good owner understands he is no owner at all. He is a custodian, a caretaker, and a beneficiary of civic trust. He grows fabulously wealthy on the currency of our passion. A bad owner screams, mine, 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 like all those seagulls in Finding Nemo. And a bad owner always has to remind you that he is the guy in charge. In the NBA, there are two franchises right now that symbolize the effects of bad ownership. The Suns and the Bulls, two teams that played for a championship in this city 25 years ago. Or, as written in SI.com today, quote, when it's time to explain a 50-point loss or a locker room mutiny or a team that's been in the lottery for a decade, the answer always starts at the top. Now, we've seen a lot of bad sports in Arizona in 2018. I hope that someday soon we'll be spared from the blight of bad ownership, the kind that can suck the joy out of everything. All right, today's delayed Bickley Blast brought to you by Chapman BMW. Two great locations, one great experience. Visit them online at chapmanbmw.com. We're just telling Vinny earlier, there's a danger to having a lot of your written stuff not on hard copy, but on a computer screen. And all of a sudden, boom, it goes to sleep on you. You're not paying attention.
He did say this just today.
And I said it to him earlier in the day because it almost happened to me earlier.
And then it did happen.
And it just happened to me. That's my bad.
And nobody prints out more things than Vince.
I've cut down tremendously.
And nobody's ever made more fun of anyone for printing out everything than I do with Vinny. I apologize to you. See, your preparation would have prevented a delayed
blast. All the years I've been on the show, that's never happened, though.
Yeah.
I've never seen... I thought maybe you just started talking and forgot to turn your mic on.
No. No. It was scrambling to control, all, delete, and get back on. That's a disaster. All right, look. My bad, okay?
But you still delivered.
Jared, it's not like you don't mess up.
Man, it'd be ridiculous. I never mess up. Seriously, name one time that I've... Wait, sorry.
Right. All right.
Talk about going totally paperless. I mean, that's you. Everything on your computer screen.
I left
the newspaper industry.
But thank you. Exactly. But
don't ask how he finishes up in the bathroom. A bidet. What did you think I was getting at?
Oh, hey. All right. So, So that's a lesson learned, because that almost happened to me earlier than it did happen to me. Oh, that's a good feeling, too.
When your heart's in your throat. Yeah.
And I'm ready to go, but I've just got to wait for this thing to fire up. And I saw you look at me I'm going to enjoy this. You know? It's like when Nick Nolte gave Eddie Murphy his badge right before they went in that country western bar.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I'm going to enjoy this. That's the way you were. You're like, oh, I'm going to enjoy this. Watching Bick flap in the wind.
Yeah, it was a kind of, I don't know, fortuitous timing.
Yep. Yep.
About the release of Andrew Sharp's piece on the Bulls mutiny, Suns misery, and the power of bad ownership in the NBA being released today on SI.com. I know this is a topic that you feel very strongly about. I know it's a topic that a lot of fans locally yep. feel very strongly about.
Yep.
So I'll let you kick it off.
I look at this and I see a couple of things happening here, and I see this cycle that the Phoenix Suns happen to be in, and we know what the cycle looks like. It's failed draft picks, failed basketball seasons, plans that change from week to week, patience that suddenly gives way to petulance, that gives way to impatience, that gives way back to, okay, we got to do this right. I see a lot of I see a lot of just up and down and just erratic stuff happening. And I have come to the conclusion that I think Robert Sarver is trapped in his own vicious cycle. And I put these words on paper, even though I have no paper in front of me today. And I think that vicious cycle that Robert Sarver is trapped in is the cycle inside his head that he has to be the one to call all the shots, even though he knows he shouldn't. Because he's a smart guy. You don't accumulate the wealth that he's accumulated without being sharp, without going, okay, this is bad for my business. Let's stop doing this. Mm-hmm. So if he knew it was bad for his business to quit acting like he knows a lot about basketball, and I'm sure he's learned, okay, but do you think you and I could just go step in and be GM of the Suns?
Me? Maybe. You? No.
Okay, well said. You do see
no,
more play.
No, I'm just joking.
So
there's no chance. There's absolutely zero chance.
There's no chance. Yeah. And I don't think we would ever, if the Suns were ours, I don't think we would ever, but maybe we would.
But here's the rub on this, okay? And you're right. I mean, and we played the David Sampson quote from earlier about, from the Dan Le Batard show, and he's talking about baseball owners. That was his world that he was in for a long time in the front office of the Marlins. If you didn't hear the quote that we played earlier, again, here's David Sampson of CBS Sports talking about sports owners in general.
Jeffrey was meddlesome for sure, but I have not come across an owner, and I've known them all for 18 years. They're all meddlesome, and none of them know what they're doing. That's the irony. They've made so much money in their other lives that they buy a baseball team. It's like what Steve Ross did with the Dolphins. He walked in and said, I'm Mr. Real Estate Magnate. I know everything, so therefore I know how to run a football team.
All right,
he didn't know anything.
To your point, Bick, yeah. Okay, could we step in and be a general manager of an NBA team? I mean, there's some people that just scoff at the idea. No, there's no chance.
Yeah.
There's so many people listening right now that believe that they could do it.
Oh, I'm sure there are.
In all sports.
I'm sure there are.
Or that they could step in and coach.
Mm-hmm.
So owners that think that they can push all the right buttons behind the scenes to make their franchise successful, they're very, very common.
Yeah. I really wish, and I say this with all due respect, because, you know, I've had many battles with Robert Sarver over the years, and as any newspaper columnist would with a owner that constantly produces bad basketball teams. But I say this with all due respect, because I think if somebody came to you and I and said, yo, why don't you just take a year, and here's plenty of money, why don't you just go travel? Take a year off, and when you come back, your job's here. You have no fear of losing your job. Wouldn't you jump on that? If somebody said, oh, yeah, no, you're not. My point is Robert Sarver could do that. He owns the Phoenix Suns. He's got more money than he knows what to do with.
Mm-hmm.
I just wish he would go and enjoy his life for a year and just let the basketball team breathe. That's all.
Okay.
That's all. And it's a shame because it would be a great solution for the basketball team. And I think it'd be a lot of fun. But go travel the world for you. Going out with your basketball team or your soccer team in Mallorca.
It sounds great in theory, but what would change in a year? What would change ostensibly with the Suns in a year, other than players getting older and maybe developing a little bit?
Just allow. You'd have to hire basketball people first. I'm not saying leave the keys to James Jones and Igor Kokoshkov. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying theoretically, why can't you just realize, all right, you know what? Hiring these inexperienced people, it's not a good idea. There's a reason why there's these fits of petulance and these knee-jerk firings, because he's hiring the wrong people.
Well, I think, you know, of all the issues, when you talk about this repeated cycle, and the cast of characters has been different several times over, we know that. But that's the common theme that begins to irk you. And ever since Alvin Gentry, from a coaching standpoint, Alvin Gentry was shown the door. It has been that inexperienced guy. Let's plug in the next inexperienced guy. That is the pattern that really frustrates people.
Yeah.
People are already frustrated with Igor Kokoshkov. And even last night in a game where there were so many positives to talk about, you could still point to, wow, those substitution patterns were kind of weird.
Yeah.
And now, might have had a hand in the Suns letting that game get away last night.
No, and I like what was said in that interview. It's that every owner meddles on some level. Every owner does. Even if you're the Rooneys and you put down these ironclad rules about, you know, what we're going to do as an organization, that's meddling because you're not just being fully adaptable or flexible. Okay, some owners are a lot better about it. The best owners are the ones who just don't need to be right and don't need to be in charge all the time, who don't who understand that this is my team, but I'm really not a part of this. That my what I do well does not add to the mix here. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
And that's what I think. That's what I think the problem is here. I think Robert Sarver believes he can make anything better based on his own involvement and make the right decisions based on his own involvement. Yet I think he just can't stop himself from hiring inexperienced people. And that's part of why we're in the boat that we're in. Now, it isn't just Robert Sarver, because the other story that ties into our local ownership bent this morning is the Ken Kendrick story about Jose Fernandez in nixing a trade that would have sent, apparently, Patrick Corbin, A.J. Pollock, in exchange for Jose Fernandez.
Yeah, this was from that same Dan Le Batard interview with David Sampson about a trade that almost went down back in the day.
I'd just like to go through names that you guys were close to getting. Like, what are some of the things that would excite Marlins fans in retrospect? Because now it can be told the Marlins were close to trading so-and-so for so-and-so.
We almost traded Jose Fernandez for Patrick Corbin, who just signed a six-year, $143 million deal with the Nationals. And we would have also gotten Brandon Drury, who was traded to the Yankees, I think, this past offseason. That was a blockbuster trade. We had Jose traded. That would have been a great trade.
What happened, though?
The owner of the Diamondbacks, a guy named Ken Kendrick, would not take Jose.
Because?
He liked his own players. A.J. Pollock, you know who that is?
I've heard the name.
Heard the name. Yeah, he's a free agent, too, a very good player. I mean, it would have been a blockbuster trade. And it was a trade we couldn't refuse, as much as we loved Jose.
All right, there is a lot to unpack there. Ken Kendrick identified as the person who nixed that trade.
Mm-hmm.
Was it the wrong decision?
No, not necessarily. What we know about Jose Fernandez, who knows what kind of a teammate he was and all that kind of stuff. You brought up the interesting fact earlier that weird tumblers of fate kind of thing. Had he been traded, would he have been on that boat in the Florida coastal causeways there?
We also, what's the timeline exactly? Because there was a couple-year period where Corbin was hurt and Pollock was hurt, where that trade in retrospect could have been great.
Yeah, could have been.
True.
Could have been. But here's what I also think. Even though he was celebrated for the acquisition of Zach Greinke, does that qualify as meddling from Ken Kendrick, or was this pushed to him? I seem to recall the story going down that finally Ken Kendrick's like, let's do this. Let's get after this. That's meddling.
I am fascinated by this subject, too, because we don't have full knowledge of the inner workings of any sports franchise.
Mm-hmm.
What general manager or vice president or whatever job title they might own?
Yeah.
How many of them sit down after being hired, and they are handed the keys unequivocally? You don't even have to clear anything. Every owner in every sport has some level of control, a great deal of control, by definition of the word ownership. And, you know, this article concentrates on the Bulls and the Suns. And I know it's been a long time since the Suns have had anything resembling mm-hmm. success. And people will point to and you may make the argument. Go ahead.
Yeah.
There's probably a lot of truth into it. They'll point at Robert Sarver being the one constant in all of it. And this constant, you know, plugging in of inexperienced people. Robert Sarver, I know when he bought the team, he inherited a great deal of talent and a pretty good situation. Mm-hmm. They did have success under Sarver. I mean, Jerry Reinsdorf. In Chicago, won 6 championships. Yes, he had the greatest player of all time.
Yeah.
They've had some levels of success since then. This topic fascinates me because I do believe, even with if you want to use the term meddlesome, with a meddlesome owner who does involve themselves in the day-to-day operations of a team, the construction of the roster and everything, I still believe success is possible.
Okay.
So then you start to look at... You start to look a little bit deeper on why that success has avoided the Phoenix Suns in particular. And I go back to that inexperience factor.
Yeah. So why does an owner keep making the same mistake?
That's a very, very legitimate question.
That's the question. And it's got to be because, in my opinion, a compulsion to always be the guy in charge, to always be the one making the call. And I think it's very difficult for Robert Sarver to let other people do that and to back away. Two things are going to have to happen here. He's either going to really have to change, like he said he has in the past, or I'm going to have to sell the team. Now, he's not going to sell the team. And it's funny that whenever you get into a situation like this, tell them to sell the team. You can't make somebody sell something they don't want to sell if they own it. Now, if you got a problem...
Unless you record them talking badly.
Yeah, that's a good point. Unless you go all Donald Sterling. Yeah, that's a good point. In this situation, I think it's relevant on a lot of different levels. You look at what's happening in Chicago, and that is really... They brought in a coach, Jim Boylan, to replace Fred Hoiberg. And Jim Boylan now is cracking a whip over this team. Back-to-back games, followed by practices. And apparently, this is kind of what Jerry Reinsdorf wants. And there are owners like that as well. There are owners who become embittered by underperforming teams and overpaid athletes. When they look at a guy and they go, I can't believe I am paying you $15 million a year and this is what you're giving me. And that resentment manifests itself into the owner hiring a bad cop head coach so you can make him work. Pull it out of him. You know what I mean? That kind of ownership. I would say if you were going to be a good owner in 2018, you have got to, in your head, realize there's going to be money I spend that looks good and money I spend that is enormous waste of money, and I just got to reconcile with that. I just got to, like, write that up. One of the many things Jerry Colangelo always did good is he kept the player mindset, never felt embittered about the money he ever paid somebody. I bring up Jerry Reinsdorf because there's a famous story in Chicago back in the day when Michael Jordan was one of those guys that he believed that if he signed a contract, he was playing for that contract regardless. He wasn't going to whine, complain, even though he was the lowest paid guy on the planet. Now, it was easy for him to say that because he had all this money from Nike and all these endorsements. He didn't need the money. So it was easy for him to be principled. When he finally cashed in and Jerry Reinsdorf had to pay him over $30 million a year, Jerry Reinsdorf's reported comment to Michael Jordan was, I hope I don't regret this. And Michael Jordan would tell us, the media in Chicago, he'd never forget. He'll never forget that. Never. Mm-hmm. After all he did to be said, I don't regret this. Okay? The point of it all is owners have to realize that their business is not just built on their money and their sweat equity. It's built on us. It's built on our passion. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
There will come a day when Robert Sarver is not the owner of the Phoenix Suns, and the Phoenix Suns are still going to be the Phoenix Suns. That day will come.
Yeah. But going back to your point on Jerry Colangelo and why he's considered, at least locally, the gold standard of sports ownership, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Consider his path. A guy who played the game at a high level.
It's true.
A guy who was an executive for a couple of teams, a general manager, a young general manager, a guy who coached on a couple of different occasions. It's not your common path to get to ownership from where Jerry Colangelo started. And his level of appreciation for the day-to-day operations of a team, much different than any other owner.
He made his money in sports. He didn't bring his money to sports.
Yes.
Yep. And then it begets this question here. If you're Robert Sarver and you're making profit with a losing basketball team, and you bought a team for $404 million, and now it's worth $1.3 billion. So you've now made $900 million in profit for missing the playoffs 9 years in a row. You going to convince him he's doing something wrong?
No, exactly. I mean, are you going to walk away from the blackjack table if you're guaranteed to make money on every hand?
Right. That's
no.
Right. That's right.
Why would you walk away?
That's right. That's exactly right. So I hope at some point in time, because I was told this was already done. I was told last year that Ryan McDonough went and got Robert Sarver to back up a little bit, enough to make a difference. Now, maybe that was to please Jay Triano, who wasn't digging it, but there's a reason why Jay Triano's not the head coach here anymore, and Igor Kokoschkov is, even though I think the former is better than the latter.
I think all things considered, Jay Triano did a commendable job last year.
I think he did. I just hope at some point in time there's a moment of true illumination. Think about the redemption story that is there for him if he could only pull it off. Now, you got to have people who draft properly, but it horrifies me. Last night's Suns game was a game where I'm like, okay, I feel better now. Because I did. About DeAndre Ayton, but mostly Josh Jackson. I'm like, okay, you know what? That looks like a good player to me. And if these guys can get it together and find a higher plateau of competing, all right, maybe this can happen.
They play again tonight, though. If tonight they come out and they look like they did the rest of the season, looking like you have promise one out of every 10 or 15 games is
Thank
not
you. That's
anything.
Playing us for fools. That's a con job is what that is. To bring this back to the Bulls example, Kings were walking off back to their locker room after the game, latest victory latest loss over Chicago. One of their players said in the hallway, uh-oh, another 2.5 hour practice for them tomorrow. NBA is a tough place, especially the way players are these days.
Yeah, especially when you're counted on to practice. I mean, in addition to making millions of dollars to play a damn game,
you're not real sympathetic for those practices after back-to-backs. Do you know what?
You know how you get better at something? You work at it.
It is kind of absurd. I've been to morning shoot-arounds and the like. And guys are standing around dribbling and shooting, and they might get a little run in. Big deal. I'm with you. Big deal. But you become accustomed to what is the norm in your industry.
Yeah, and that's the norm, is nobody mm-hmm. practices anymore.
Yeah. All right. And so nobody develops, and here we go.
That's when I like to talk to, old-time players. Players that played in the 70s and 80s, before the NBA was as gigantic entity.
Yeah.
When they were flying commercial and they were playing 3 nights in a row and 4 games and 5 nights and they were practicing for 2.5 hours a day and they weren't making any money and they were staying in not 5-star hotels.
Mm-hmm. No, I know, man.
I don't claim to know all the inner workings of what's happening in Chicago either. If it's an extreme example, if Jim Boylan's going over the top with all of this, but
I'm right,
if my team loses by 56 points, something's going to change.
Yeah, and you know what? It's funny, too, because until you've ever flown private, you don't understand how ridiculous it is for athletes to complain about air travel.
Oh, yeah.
Just leave it there.
It is Tuesday. We're a little bit late. We were early the first time. We're a little bit late this time. Yeah. It all evens out,
right? It fits in with the tone of the whole segment.
Ticket Window Tuesday opens now.
Caller number, Vic.
Caller number 9, Vinny.
All right, caller number 9 right now on this Ticket Window Tuesday brought to you by Arizona Central Credit Union. Just dial 602-260-9870. You're going to score a pair of two-day passes to the second annual Innings Festival. It's coming to Tempe Beach Park. March 2nd and 3rd, the festival includes Eddie Vedder, Incubus, Jimmy Eat World, Cake, and many, many more. Again, caller number 9 right now, 602-260-9870. You will be the second of our two winners on this Ticket Window Tuesday. Coming up, we'll continue to talk NBA, Phoenix Suns. Big day coming up on Saturday, potentially, for the Suns in terms of moving forward. We'll talk to Bobby Marks, ESPN NBA front office insider, next. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Before we welcome in Bobby Marks for an NBA discussion, let me just say this on the record.
Yeah.
Gonzalez, no.
Oh, no, we're not rebuilding. we're not just trying to slot in some aging former has-been to play first base to tide us over.
Not a former has-been, a current has-been.
Yeah, that too. Him too.
All right. We just had to get that out of the way as a reaction to Sarah's update. Joining us now on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line, ESPN NBA front office insider Bobby Marks, our guest here on Bickley and Murata. Bobby, how are you?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
Good. Can we start? I'm going to start out with a question, not specific to anything, but we were just having the discussion about NBA ownership and general managers and things like that. And as a guy who has the experience that you have, what percentage of basketball fans out there do you think they could go in and do a good job? as an NBA executive? Because I think the number's very high.
Probably higher than coaching, I would say. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's funny. It's, you know, and I'm sure it would probably make my friends in the front offices upset. It's, you know, the head coach, you know, we always see a, you know, kind of in and out as far as the firing process, the rotating door. But, you know, who at the end of the day holds the front office accountable? You know,
yeah.
I mean, it's like if we hold the front office accountable like we hold the coaches accountable, I mean, we'd have a high turnover in, you know, in general manager or front offices. And usually it's the owner who holds them accountable. And most of the time the owner has another business. And the NBA team is probably not their priority. I mean, if you're looking at Chicago with Jerry Reinsdorf, either having the White Sox, I mean, that's probably his priority, and his son is in charge of the Bulls here. So,
yep. That's
no,
right.
You're right. I mean, you look at all the. I mean, how many coaches have gotten fired in the last, you know, 5 or 6 years compared to how many GMs have gotten fired? And,
yeah.
You know, I saw it in New Jersey. I mean, we went through. I mean, we recycled head coaches here and there, and you know. In the front office, rarely went unchanged.
By the way, let me ask you this, because last week in a column I wrote, I wrote that it's about time for Adam Silver to open the hood and check out what's going on in Phoenix, an intervention, if you will. What do you think about the level of what's going down in Phoenix? Not just that, just how long things have been wrong.
Oh, I mean, I hear you. I mean, and now. I think things make a little bit worse is that the team that you were, I guess, compared to, Sacramento, is ahead of you. I mean, did we ever think that you could say that Sacramento was ahead of you in the rebuild?
No,
and they are. I mean, realistically, you know, where Sacramento has with their, I mean, they've got a backcourt of the future, and, you know, besides, you know, with Devin there, you know, Phoenix is still looking for that, for that point guard. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's all about, you know, having a plan and sticking to it, and if you're willing to go through some pain for, you know, 4 or 5 years that can turn out to be success for the long haul, then you do it. But, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, and I've written about it before, what's happened with the head coaches there has really set the organization back. I think Darrell Watson hiring set the organization back a couple of years here. So, yeah, I mean, in the big picture here, you know, Phoenix should not be 4-24 or whatever their record is, and to be down, you know, 25-3 to start games here when you've gone through years of building through the lottery and you've missed out on so many players.
Bobby Marks, ESPN NBA front office insider, our guest here on Bickley and Murata. You mentioned the point guard spot. Obviously, the Suns do not have that right now. Once upon a time, the Suns were the home for point guards. They'd have 3 or 4 every single year, seemingly, and now they don't really have a viable candidate. With December 15 rolling around this weekend, realistically, who are some of the candidates that maybe the Suns could nab to take over this offense for the rest of the season?
Well, the hard part's going to be is that we're in a period now where there's going to be so many free agents this year. So the guys out there that potentially could be available, that maybe the Spencer Dinwiddies of the world. I doubt Terry Rozier will be available just based on that team is going to try to win it all this year, and they'll figure out really what happens with Rozier in the off season. But yeah, guys like Dinwiddie, if you go out and give Brooklyn a solid offer, he certainly is available. But then you got to pay him in the off season, so that's kind of where you're a little bit hesitant. Not a great draft with point guards here, so. It's not a good spot to be in looking for a point guard right now. You know, John Wall's available, but do you want to go out and you know, owe him 4 years, $170 million
for the next,
that's your big free agent and the guy who's got, you know, bone spurs right now. You know, Reggie Jackson of it is available for Detroit, and you know, that would basically, you know, tie up, you know, most of your cap space for this upcoming summer. I mean, those are the type of guys that you know, that teams are looking to move that are available. And if I'm Phoenix, they're not real appealing to me.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. All right, is Luka Doncic making every NBA executive look stupid outside of Dallas? And if so, why was there such a debate when one kid had such a body of work against grown men like he did?
I think a lot of it had to be we get caught up in the hype of the NCAA and seeing these kids on ESPN or Fox or You know, we got caught up in the Trae Young hype last year, and I think Trae Young will be a good solid pro. I don't think he'll be where Luke is right now. You know, with regarding DeAndre and Phoenix, I had DeAndre 1 and Luka 2, so I'm not going to kind of play Monday morning quarterback right now. But I think a lot of it just a lot of people never saw Luka Doncic over in Spain. You know, we heard about him. Games are not on TV over here until we kind of get to see him in our own eyes. And I've said all along that league that he's played in, it's the same league that Porzingis played in, 4 or 5 years ago, is as good as any league that we'll see, from a college comparison. So, yeah, I mean, he certainly made, I guess the good thing for some of these general managers is that he didn't get picked at 10 or 11. he did get picked in the top five. So, it's only really, if we're going to second guess, I guess it would be, some of those teams, like Atlanta who traded for, flip-flop those picks there.
Bobby Marks, ESPN, NBA Front Office Insider, our guest here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. December 15th, we've had that date circled on the calendar now for a while concerning Trevor Ariza. That's the first day he can be traded because he signed a contract over the summer. What are you hearing? We've heard reports of maybe 8 or 9 teams, the Lakers hot and heavy about Trevor Ariza. What's the latest you're hearing on any market for him, Bobby?
Well, I don't want to pour cold water, not on Ariza, but on December 15th. And I know it is kind of the unofficial date, but, I mean, we haven't had a trade since 2010 on December 15th. So it is, the restrictions are lifted on free agents, but teams are a little bit in a holding pattern. But, yeah, I mean, Ariza, an expiring contract, I think a lot of teams would like to see him go into the buyout market. I think that will not happen like what we saw with Tyson Chandler. I think it's just a matter of what James Jones wants to get out of it. I think it's going to be hard for him to go out and get a playmaking guard that has some years left on his contract. I don't think I'd want anything to do with Kentavious Caldwell-Pope just because you're going to probably have to go through the buyout process with his agent, Rich Paul. So what does that do for you here? So I think you got to sit back a little bit and let the standings kind of shake out and see if teams get desperate when we get into, into late January, early February, because we're still almost 2 months away. So I would be stunned if Ariza is moved, this weekend when restrictions are lifted. I think you're in a little bit of a holding pattern. I think probably the likely name that gets moved is Carmelo Anthony. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that Houston's been working on a deal to try to get rid of his money and put some cash in there. But I think if you're the Suns front office, is that you just kind of sit tight right now. A team that, as I said, when we're going through the Jimmy Butler situation, is that there'll be a team like possibly maybe Houston that's going to be a game out of the playoffs in late January, or maybe even Dallas, one of those teams that are willing to give you a little bit more than, in 2 months from now than they are right now.
All right, let me ask this, Bobby, because James Jones, one of the moves that he's getting ripped for was for just waving, cutting Tyson Chandler, gifting him to the Lakers when he had an expiring contract that, ostensibly carries value in the NBA. That in mind, do you think James Jones's relationship with LeBron James, which they're very tight accordingly, is going to pay off for him in the long run?
Well, that's why I'm kind of, before I, critique the, James Jones and the Chandler move, the how it works is that it's such a business on relationships, either front offices, GMs, and agents. Hopefully Jeff Schwartz, Tyson Chandler's agent, returns the favor down the road. I mean, that's usually how it works here, where I will do you a favor, I will let you out of your contract, we'll shave $2 million, you can go to the Lakers here, but, come the draft, come to free agency, that favor is returned. So, we'll see if that's the case here. But I don't see a case where he's going to gift, Trevor Ariza to Lakers and basically get nothing back in return, just based on, where the value is. And I think, you guys have mentioned it, they got 9 or 10 calls the other day, on Ariza. And he is probably the most appealing player out there because he's on an expiring and, the value of wing defenders.
Bobby, thanks so much for the time and the insight. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Bobby Marks, ESPN NBA Front Office Insider, our guest on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. That's CoulterTempe.com, Coulter on Camelback.com, and CoulterNissan.com. Cyrus Baravati was our winner, second winner on Ticket Window Tuesday. He was the correct caller. He's got tickets, a two-day pass to the Innings Festival coming up in March. Your last chance to win on this Ticket Window Tuesday presented by Arizona Central Credit Union. Coming up with Burns and Gambo today at around 4:15. Coming up next, a milkshake can solve many things. Can it win you a bowl game?
Milkshakes are awesome.
We will find out next. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Dan Bittley.
You know what I want to be in my next life? I want to be a Viking pirate.
Vince Murata.
Hey, I'm right there with you.
I know you are. We're both freakshows in our own right.
Bickley and Murata.
Can't tell you. Secret. And I can't mention the places because then they'll say, well, yours, you know, it's not good. We're gonna get a hamburger somewhere. I can't mention the place, obviously. We're going to get a milkshake somewhere. I can't mention that place. I'm really excited about the milkshake, to be quite honest.
ASU head coach Herm Edwards. We are like 5 days away from the bowl game. The Las Vegas Bowl. Fresno State. ASU. Do you agree with the decision for ASU to bus up to Vegas?
No, I don't. I think it's a dreadful decision.
I drink your milkshake.
I've never made the drive to Vegas. Jarrett has.
Often.
You've never made the drive
fun.
To Vegas?
Never.
It's not bad, though.
It's not bad?
No, it's 4.5 hours.
Okay.
But if you have the opportunity.
I can't believe you've never made that drive.
No. I made the drive to Rocky Point frequently.
It's just the drive back that gets you in trouble.
Yeah, I'm not a big Vegas guy, first of all. And second of all, I don't know what to think of this other than that's really a cost-cutting maneuver, isn't it? I mean, if you want your kids to be fresh to play a bowl game, I guess they're leaving today, so I guess they've got plenty of time to get acclimated. But what's funny is that they're breaking up this trip to stop and get burgers.
You can't stop a plane to get a milkshake.
It's true.
I tried.
How about a train?
Yeah, they should be taking a train.
They should be on a train.
What is this?
And they're going to stop and get milkshakes.
It's my milkshake.
Herm Edwards came out and said, I can't wait for my milkshake. They've got chocolate, vanilla, and strawberry.
Oh, I got the cut right here.
I'm like, that's pretty pedestrian, man.
Oh, the milkshake. That's all I'm thinking about. I know exactly what kind I'm getting to. I'm not telling anybody. The players been asking, so you don't need to know. They get three. They get strawberry, vanilla, or chocolate. Now, I got a special one coming. They're going to want the one I have, but I'm not telling them yet. I'm just kind of waiting. I'm just... Oh, you know, come on. I could almost taste it. I said, the bus can't get there fast enough. Right.
What?
I like vanilla and chocolate.
What in the heck is he
talking about?
What is he talking about? Look, as we talked about in the break, milkshakes are really good. On the list of subtle treasures,
it's like
chocolate milk makes the list. Milkshakes make the list. Although I prefer a little malt powder in mine.
Really?
Oh yeah. Malt powder. Love it too.
It's not bad.
Vanilla
I would not prefer
love
it
too. Love it too.
Whipped cream on top?
No.
I haven't had a milkshake in years.
Because milkshakes for once is undoing.
The reason why I once got heavy was milkshakes.
The reason you needed Revitalize was milkshakes.
Yes, ultimately. I miss them dearly.
That Herm answer was like something Mike Leach would do.
Yeah.
Give you 3 minutes on milkshakes.
It wasn't quite three. No,
I know. It was.
Mike Leach would give you 3 minutes.
If they're stopping, well, maybe they just gave the players three choices just so the order wouldn't be cumbersome, right? What is Herm Edwards getting in his milkshake? Reminds me of that famous line from Pulp Fiction. Pay $5 for a milkshake?
Must be a pretty good milkshake.
Oh, jeez. $5 milkshake. Oh, man. Oh, jeez.
Oh, there's a bowl game to be played, too, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like anybody cares about that game. He's already talking about quarterbacks not named Manny Wilkins playing in the bowl game. These bowl games are such a joke. Somebody pointed out, I forget who it was, bowl games for the most part have become the equivalent of the cigarette lighter in an automobile. Completely unnecessary.
Yeah. The difference
or
is
maybe, or
you
maybe,
don't have a cigarette lighter in your
ashtray anymore.
That's true.
Yeah.
Those went
away.
Remember the old ashtrays in the handles of your seats in airplanes?
Mm-hmm.
That were still there even though there was no smoking allowed on the plane? That was kind of, because it took them a while to kind of.
I will say this, and I lived through it.
Yeah.
Going back, and when you watch like period movies and television shows, and they're smoking in planes and in bars and in restaurants and at work, it seems like it's a different planet, doesn't it?
It sure does. It sure does.
Yeah, anyway, Herm Edwards did say at his press conference yesterday, could expect to see Dylan Sterling Cole getting some time, depending on how the game shakes out. And we can sit here and poo-poo the importance of this game and, you know, a lot of the bowl games, quite honestly. They're a reward that might be earned in some cases. You might be filling a quota in some cases if you get a bowl bid. Manny Wilkins, this bowl game, I believe, means a lot to him. This is the last time he's going to wear that uniform.
Yeah. Might be the last time he plays football, period.
Yeah, I mean, I could see him getting a shot at a camp. Maybe next year in the NFL.
You can?
Yeah.
Okay.
At a camp.
All right. Do you see him making an NFL roster? I don't. And I'm not trying. Look, we don't need to get in this conversation. I don't want to denigrate the young man. He's given a lot to the program. An awful lot to the program. He's given everything he has to the program. And I respect the kid.
Yeah. But, you know, four quarterbacks in every camp. That's over 120 jobs.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Just saying.
Okay.
But, you know, you put your own damper on the importance of a bowl game, too, when N'Keal Harry's not playing.
Yeah. I know.
This list of players that's not playing continues to grow. I understand that. I'm not going to attack anybody for that. But there was a time where I'd go nuts for bowl games.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Just like there was a time when I'd go nuts for a milkshake. See, it all comes full circle.
And like I told you, there was a time
when I got fat on bowl games once.
There was a time. Well, I got fat off of Hostess baseball cards. They once put baseball cards on the back of Twinkies. And where I grew up, I found an outlet store, a Hostess outlet store. And me and a friend of mine riding our bikes one day behind the store, we ran across a dumpster that was overflowing.
Wait a minute.
And we realized that this dumpster overflowing with Hostess Twinkies and cupcakes were all product that was past the expiration date.
There's no such thing.
That's my point. But they were, and they were removed from the shelves and thrown away. We drive by there constantly, gorge on Twinkies, get the baseball cards on the back.
Right. And eat out of the dumpster.
Well, they were wrapped. What do you expect from a Southside hood rat, dude? Come on, give me a break.
I remember those
baseball cards. And yeah, I gained about 15,000 pounds that summer.
Literally.
About.
I remember the cards on the bottom of the box. And you have to eat the whole box before you could get...
Bingo!
Yeah. I got to get that Greg Luzinski card.
I got to get that. George Foster!
George Foster!
Look, I'm three Twinkies away from a Freddie Patek.
Freddie Patek, you see Super 70 Sports put out, how did this guy who looked like this once lead the American League in stolen bases?
No, he was more descriptive. He said he looks like your local Walgreens pharmacist, and he led the American League in stolen bases. All right, we're thoroughly off the rails. Let's keep it going, shall we? Hollywood screenwriter, Super Suns fan, Rhett Reese will join us next. He'll also stick around to play Mock My World.
Rhett Butler.
Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.